Hi, I'm Terry Meekin. Welcome to Roving Report. This week, we're all off to see Tom George, the racehorse trainer, to get the inside information on the racing industry. How to train horses, how to win them, and what the problems are running a business like this. Tom, where did you get into the business? Why horse racing and horse training? You come from a farming background?
Yeah, I was actually born and bred in Slad. This is my childhood home. Father was farmed here, was involved in racing in an amateur fashion, so point-to-pointing. And then my mother's side had a big stud farm in Ireland, and for generations they hadn't done anything else but racing, breeding.
So are you Irish yourself, would you say, or
no, Gloucester? My mother was from Ireland, and that's how one side of the family are totally involved in bloodstock.
Because you went up to Scotland to a private school, I believe, and then did you have to go into any specialised field of equestrian learning after that to get into this, or did you just learn it on the cuff by chucking yourself in the deep end in it?
I left school when I was just 17, and I knew sort of then what I wanted to do, what the industry I wanted to go into, and I've actually worked every day since then, so I went straight into employment.
For somebody else, was it?
For other people, but I've worked in all the different angles of the business. I've worked on a stud farm, I worked for a bloodstock insurance, I worked for a bloodstock agency, I worked in national hunt yards in England, France, I worked in Ireland, and I actually started training on my own when I was 28.
You started as Tom George Racing Stables when you were 28 here?
Yeah, I started after my last job was actually in France. And I returned here then, and I started off literally with just three horses and built it up from there.
So much competition to get people who own horses to come to a trainer. I mean, are you up against other people and you've got to build up, keep your reputation up? I mean, it's a very competitive industry, I suppose, stripping it down.
It is. There's a lot of big trainers in this area, and Gloucester's really taken off. So the major trainers here are John Joe O'Neill, who's not too far away, Nigel Clifton Davis, and there's a lot of smaller trainers as well.
Well, they're imports. They're not really Gloucestershire men, though, are they, like yourself?
Yeah, they could, John Joe O'Neill will definitely be an import. I think Nigel Clifton Davis has been there for a long time, Naunton near Cheltenham. But no, there wouldn't be many people around here, you know, been here as long as I have, so to speak, but so then just have to build it up from there. It is a very competitive business, and you've got to make the results work to attract the clients.
Do you get repeat clients? Is it, if you had clients for a long time of the same name come to you, or is there a turnover of clients who think, well, I think I'll try somebody else now, and they keep moving around?
Bit of everything. I prefer not the people who like keep on moving around. It's obviously nice to have a bit of stability and know that what you're doing, they'll hopefully reward you. If you do well for them, they'll be back for another horse after the first one. So obviously it's nice to have a stable business, but success is normally bringing more horses.
Is it individual owners still, or is it more syndicates now, business syndicates and that own horses, would you say?
Both. I've got a lot of horses which are individually owned, and we've got a lot of syndicate horses. There's a local horse called Lord Ryford, and they're all local businessmen and put a syndicate together. He's called Lord Ryford. So Ryford's just outside Stride. So there's lots of different angles to come into the sport.
So they come here, the horses, and they stay here while you train them, and they stay here during their racing career, or do they go back to the owner's territory, if you like, and they just come here for the training sessions?
Bit of everything. Most of them probably do stay here 12 months a year. They come to me, not knowing a great deal about it, and you train them up to get them into sort of that kind of athlete they are.
You mean the horses aren't, they got no background in racing before they come here? You're not an improver, you're from a novice upwards, is that how it goes?
Everything. We have, they come at all stages. They come as unraced, broken in, as in they've never been sat on by a human being before. So you have to teach them, you know, that's right from start. Or some of them come from other yards, or we buy them from the sales. A lot of them come from abroad now, so they come from every different angle.
How many horses do you have here at a time then, would you say?
We have about 65 in full
training. How many is that?
In full training,
yeah. What, residential stables, 65 in residential?
Yeah, 65 being ridden out every day. And then I've got quite a few out in the field, young horses, recuperating from injuries. And then I have more horses in a pre-training yard near Bath, where they go to spend 6 weeks there before they come into training with me.
The people who do the riding out each day, are they professional jockeys, or are they amateur enthusiasts?
their full-time employment by myself. With the jockey, he rides them at the races. He only comes in once or twice a week. And then the stable staff who ride them on a daily basis, they're on full-time employment. And a lot of them are, you know, youngsters wanting to become a jockey one day, and they have to learn the profession, so to speak.
So there's about, what, 20 people on the books who are actually doing the riding? Is that as many as that?
I think we've probably got about 17 or 18 full-time employees, and then we have one or two who just ride out only as well, so quite a few.
Can you tell immediately with all your experience there whether the horse is going to be any good or not? Have you got an instinct for it?
Yeah, you get an idea, but they always surprise you. Sometimes the horse who shows little at home, very laid back, very relaxed, doesn't really put a lot of effort and enthusiasm, goes to races and he wakes up and he produces the goods, and vice versa. You've got the horse at home, always on edge, looking very enthusiastic, probably too keen at home, and he goes to races and it's all too much for him, he can't cope with it. So just because they're very good at home and vice versa, that doesn't always add up, but generally speaking, I have a pretty good idea before they ever go to the races to what ability they are.
They are quite intelligent creatures, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. I mean, the 65 horses which are in the yard at one time here, they're all completely individuals. I mean, it's no different. People almost look at a dairy farm and say, how do you know your cows? But I can understand totally how you'd know them. And in 65, they've all got their own characteristics. They're all got their own person, and we've just got to learn to get the best out of them.
I mean, like sportsmen and sportswomen, you know, they obviously are aware that they've got special gifts. Do these horses think that they're a little bit better than your average horse? do they know they've got a gift?
Yeah, the good ones know they're good. they soon work it out. But it's what you have to do is it's a fine line between actually getting the best out of them, but so they enjoy it rather than trying pushing them too hard, and then they'll turn on you, and they won't perform their best. You've got to understand when to press the buttons and when not to.
And do you ever have to give up on them sometimes and say, I don't think I can do anything with this one? Do you go back to an owner and say, look, I'm really sorry?
I do it all the time, yeah.
Do you?
I won't keep a horse if I don't think he's going to win me some races, no. They don't like it after me ring up and say that I'm sorry, but this is as much as I can do. But it's rather like a human being. It doesn't depend on how hard you train. Some people may be capable of competing at the village sports, whereas others can compete at the Olympics, and I wanted to compete with the best.
Have you made some mistakes along the line where you've turned something down and they've gone somewhere else and they've actually turned out to be...
Thankfully, I haven't made too many. There's always the odd one slips through the net, but if I kept everyone, I'd have too many horses. So, but on the whole, I'd like to think that we generally get it right, and I'm trying to compete with the top of the profession rather than the middle and bottom. And there are horses which I'll say, look, try somewhere else. It's not really what we're after. We want to compete with the best.
Any of your horses go to the real top races, the Aintrees and the Gold Cups and things like this? Or are they all your day-to-day racing horses?
Very much so. We've entering the Grand National this year. We had an entry in the Gold Cup. He's not actually going to run the Gold Cup now. He's going to probably run the Champion Chase. We've got horses competing at the highest level.
Still a very early career yet. Do you reckon is the best one you put out?
Hard to say. We've won a couple of Grade 1 races, which is the best you can win.
Grade 1 being the equivalent of the Gold Cup, is it?
The Gold Cup's a championship race. Grade 1 races is Group 1 level. So they're the absolute championship of that section rather than the Gold Cup, so to speak.
What about welfare of the horses then? Are they fairly healthy normally, or do they succumb to sickness much more over the 12 months?
We spend a lot of time with the vets.
Local vet, is it?
No, I use a specialist racing vet. Gloucestershire based, but deals in racehorses.
So they have a better understanding of what the needs are of a racehorse as opposed to an ordinary horse, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to look upon it as being exactly the same as an international footballer, even though the local doctor to him may be very good, he'd use a specialist in that area, and that's exactly what we do. We use a specialist who deal with the day-to-day problems which racehorses have, rather than problems which generally horses have in a normal vet.
Do you combine training with ownership as well, or do you keep the two things completely separate? Do you buy your own horses and train them?
Yeah, I always have one or two of my own horses.
So you might find some of your customers coming up against your own horse in a race.
No, they're always for sale. So
I see.
And the iron's always for sale. So occasionally I roll the dice and I say, right, I'll keep that one myself.
What does a training regime cost?
Well, this really is a difficult one to answer, because the price of a horse is you can go to local sales and you buy one for £600, but I'm not going to say that can win you any races, but it does happen. And you could also go to the Cheltenham sale last week, and the top lots of the evening were horses who'd won Point to Points in Ireland, and they were making 200,000. So you've got a very, very long piece of string to recover on that one. There's no set price at all. I suppose realistically, to give yourself the best chance, looking from sort of 10,000 upwards probably. But I have got horses in this yard who cost half that amount, and they do win their races. If they're older and they're costing that, they might have had injuries in the past, and sometimes that's one of the ways, that's the way I got into training. I bought a lot of horses with injuries and then tried to patch them up and get them back onto the race course.
So 10 grand to buy a decent, well, a half decent horse with a half a chance maybe at the bottom end of the market, and then sort of out there would they have to put out?
Generally costs, when you take into account the vets, the blacksmiths, everything else, the whole thing, about 1500 a month.
That include the food and everything else?
That's so, everything, yeah, going to the races. Because obviously there's transport, taking horses to the races, all these, there's lots of things which keep on adding up. And that's how the syndicates can work quite well, is if you have 10 people who own a horse, it makes it far more reasonable than single ownership, and you can still have all the enjoyment of going to the races with your own horse.
I mean, transportation costs must be quite high as well, I would think. Or does every syndicate and horse owner have its own trailer, or do you do it all for them?
Yeah, we've got two lorries of our own, so that's another. Transport, it is expensive, so we've got obviously the upkeep, and we do charge per mile. I've got a horse who's gone up to Musselburgh who's racing tomorrow, so expensive day out, 2 days for that horse, but you know, it's where he needed to go, the ground's better up there, and hopefully he wins some prize money while he's away.
Not overnight, but it's pretty much a 7 day a week job, is it?
Yeah, I mean, like, sort of hours don't really exist in our industry. And we start early in the mornings and you do what you've got to do. I'm racing most days in the week, so do a lot of travelling. And it's a long week. Often we're racing on Sundays as well, so you can quite often go, you know, 2 weeks without any form of a break. But everyone has to work, the staff work very hard, and they get good opportunities to try and let everyone have a good holiday in the summer.
If you were in control of the industry, there's always things that the industry regulators do that the people at the sharp end of the stick don't agree with. Or do you think everything's right in the industry? Or would you change anything?
No, there's an enormous amount of problems in the industry. Like every industry, I think the prize money is the one which has been the area which has the most effect on all of us. Unfortunately,
is it skewed? Is that what the problem is? Too much towards a few people? Is that what you're saying?
No, that's not what it is. But just the general day-to-day races, the prize money should be higher. So if your horse is capable of winning one of those, and you do win one of those, you should be rewarded. Great, but you know.
So where is the money going then? Well, first of all, where does the prize money come from? Well,
the money's that's what the problem is. The money's not coming in the first place, like it is in other countries. I do a lot of racing in France. We race them there a lot, and the prize money is enormous. All the money comes from the pari mutuel, which is the equivalent of the tote. The racing's funded internally by the betting, rather than going offshore to different companies. It all gets ploughed back into the industry.
What happens over here then?
In this country, the prize money is coming from the levy, from the government, and they're putting in a certain percentage of the betting money coming back into the industry, rather than in France. Australia, all the money is governed by the pari mutuel.
So you would suggest then that to improve the racing in this country, it would be best if the prize money was funded from the tote directly?
But what the problem is now, the tote isn't even government owned, it's been sold to Betfred, so that can never happen. So like a bookmaker now owns a tote, so the money is never going to get ploughed back into the racing in this country like it is in other countries.
Does that mean that it's a declining industry, or is it just the thrill of doing the business still keeps people into it, even though the rewards aren't there?
It's not a decline, but it's an area which is not helping the industry at all. There's a lot of people going out of business because of it. The small yards are really struggling. And the ownership, I think last year, dropped by 12%, and that's the main reason behind it. My business probably took off more by the fact is that I said, right, I'm going to start racing horses in France, where the prize money is enormous, and we've won a lot of money over there, and that's encouraging a lot of new clients. So it's helped me to a certain extent, but it definitely been a big, had a big impact on the smaller yard.
You never thought about moving over there then and starting the yard over there, and if that's where, if that's where it's all happening? Big rent to leave here, mind, but
I did. It's been mentioned to me a lot of times, actually, but no, I'm not going there. The laws in France aren't easy either, so I'm better off going there and coming back. I don't want to go down the employment laws over there. So so it works well for me, as I said, to take the horse over there for a couple of weeks and bring him home again. We're not far from France. So.
What about Ireland? Is that a better prize money climate than England? Or is that
the prize money in Ireland generally is better. They don't have anywhere near as much racing in Ireland as they do here, so prize money is probably a bit better than here.
Are there still the same number of bookmakers on the courses themselves, or are they declining?
I think they're declining. I think the problem with that is now everything's done on the internet. They're going straight offshore. It's having a big effect on the whole industry.
I believe a lot of the offshore internet betting takes place in Gibraltar and places like that, where there's tax havens for the companies that run them.
That's exactly it. And so the money then doesn't then go back directly into the industry.
I think the government was trying to plug that hole, if I remember reading something about
it. They're always trying to plug that hole, but it's unfortunate is that it happened a long time over the last 15 years, and it's all too late. Once it's happened, it's impossible to try and repair the holes. It's the way things are now that the money isn't coming back to where it should be.
So it's not the same business as you really entered 10 or 15 years ago. The external environment, the horse is the same, the trend's the same, and the pleasure of doing that. But the external environment in which you operate is changed.
That everyone is very aware of it, and there's a lot of work goes out to try and improve that, the economics of it. As I said, I'm in a fortunate position that we've got some good horses who are competing at the best, but I wouldn't like to have to go back in at the bottom at this stage. It would be very hard to start under this economic climate, not only within the industry, but the whole economics in the country.
As a business itself, you're going to keep it at the same level it is and try and do the best you can in the ever-changing environments, or have you got plans to expand?
I'm always looking to expand in a small way. Well, I expand when I need to at the top level. I'm not going to expand for low-key horses, but if there's always going to be room for a better one, or top-notch horse.
Well, you've got a long time to go before you hang up your boots, but when you do hang up your boots eventually, we want to highlight to be what? The fact that you've had a major championship winner. Would that be the crowning glory?
Yeah, I'd obviously would like to win a Gold Cup, a Grand National, something like this, but I like it. It's kept on the farm I live on. It's kept the place as it was, and it's gone back to probably 50 years ago. The farm employed 20 people, and we're now employing 20 people again on this farm with the racehorses. So at least we're back to where what should be happening in the end.
What do you do to train a horse in a week?
Training a horse is probably very similar to training an athlete. Start off, if a horse arrives with me, I'm fit, comes in at the field, he's been broken, and so he knows what he's been taught to do, the general riding. So he'll start off by just doing light work for the first 4 weeks, just walking, trotting, and then you spend another week just doing slow, steady canters. Every 2 days you're just picking it up more and more. You're just increasing his workload. It takes me a minimum of 3 months, between 3 and 4 months, to get them to racing fitness from when they arrive with me.
Just physical fitness?
Physical fitness.
And that's done by what, running up hills, running over special grounds?
We've got 3 all-weather gallops, all different surfaces, and we do interval training as well as longer work, and we train them on the hill and on the flat as well. So it's just building up general.
So how many hours a day would they be worked for?
They're probably out of their stables for in the morning. Every horse goes out for a minimum of an hour. We have a machine, there's a horse walker, so they might walk a couple of miles in the evening as well. Some go out in the paddock for an hour or two in the daytime. Bit of everything, but they're pretty busy.
This programme would be very interesting to people that don't know anything about horse racing, because there's a lot of information being shared. But there's always your average Joe in the street who reckons that there's a man who gives him a tip from a yard, and that's the inside knowledge. Is there such a thing as a dead cert, or is it pretty much depend on what's happening on the day and variations?
There's no dead cert at all, and sometimes too much information is a dangerous thing as well, because you can get yourself bombarded by the information. But obviously we've got an idea, more of an idea, what's going to happen than somebody on the streets, but doesn't always mean to say that I know a lot about my own horses, and there's probably 10 others in the race.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know about the other 9. So we're quite focused on what we're doing ourselves rather than worrying about everyone else.
If one wasn't a trainer and one sees a parade of horses going before a race, is there any indications that one can look at to see who's up for it that day and who isn't?
Yes, just general well-being. You can see the horses walking around the paddock at the races, and
his ears picked
up. Horses are in better condition than others, which up normally means shows their level of fitness. It's the same as, I don't know, people walking around the start for the marathon. You can normally tell the ones who are going to do a bit better than the ones who aren't.
What about the breeding side of it? Is that something which you get into at all?
I only have one broodmare myself. I buy young stock, 2-year-olds, foals, yearlings. We buy them from England, France, Ireland. Those are our 3 main sources. Obviously, it's absolutely vital. I know all the bloodlines. Well, I know a lot about it, because obviously that has a big impact. And then you get success with some stallions. So you like to buy their progeny.
How far back do some of these lines go?
When we buy a horse at sale, that we look at 4 generations.
And a horse's life is what, 20 years?
Yes, is that where there's any racing for probably... Their racing's normally 6 years. Well, it depends on the individual. The oldest horse I've got is 13. He started racing when he was 4. He wasn't with me then, but... You know, that's exceptional. Not many last that long. Well, not last that long, carrying on racing.
Are there specific breeds which are preferable for trainers to actually use because they've got a special genetic makeup that they race better?
Well, they've got to be a thoroughbred for starters, and so they've got to be registered at General Stud. But so you've only got the thoroughbred who can compete. In France, they've got this, what they call Sale Francais, which is... non-thoroughbred, but that's one particular strain over in France. But in England, and generally, they've got to be registered in the stud book to race. So.
If somebody wanted to become a trainer of horses, would they become an apprentice to someone like yourself?
Well, yeah, I mean, you all have to start. You've got to learn your industry. You either get the brakes or you get yourself in a position to be fortunate enough to be in charge of your own destiny. There's no rules and regulations, you just got to be able to achieve it.
Are you all looking over the wall of everybody else's training establishment and see what sort of thing they're doing that's different to yours, or do you just carry on and plough your own furrow?
It's the same as every other industry. You all know what your competitors do and what they don't do, and you like some of the things they do and you dislike other things they do.
If I've got a horse and I come to you and I come to other trainers, what would be the message that you would say to me that would make you distinctives against the competitors?
I think it's attention to detail. A lot of small things add up into a big thing. You have to treat each horse as an individual, know exactly what they are rather than as a number, and therefore you generally know when to push the buttons and when not to, so you get the best out of them.
Tom George, thank you very much. You've been listening to Roving Report, produced and presented by Terry Meekin. Where this week we've been talking to Tom George, the racehorse trainer. Roving Report, radio for the community.